from the Center for the Study of God and Culture and the studios of Faith Talk 1500, it's the Paul Edwards Program. Information, commentary, and podcasts are always online at godandculture.com. Now, here's your host, Paul Edwards.
The Paul Edwards Program is live today from the beautiful campus of Spring Arbor University. It's a little rainy outside, but that doesn't dampen the spirits of a lot of the students. We're in the student center that is abuzz with activity, as you can probably hear behind me, with a lot of students in and out. We're right next to the dining common. So if you want to find college students, that's where you'll find them, near the dining commons, particularly at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Welcome in here to the second hour of the Paul Edwards Program, all across southeastern Michigan, northwest Ohio, and parts of Ontario, Canada, here in the Center for the Study of God and Culture, 866-423-9578, the phone number, and paul@godandculture.com, the email address. Got a big announcement coming up tomorrow on the Paul Edwards Program. Big announcement. Tweet your friends. Put it on Facebook. Tell folks to be tuning in at 4 p.m. tomorrow for a big announcement here on the Paul Edwards Program. A little later this hour, we'll be joined by some former students and some faculty at Spring Arbor University, and looking forward to highlighting the campus here at Spring Arbor for you as you consider your educational options. Yesterday, as I told you yesterday on the program, I happened to be listening to the Glenn Beck program. Glenn Beck was so much better when he was just on radio. When I first started listening to Glenn Beck years ago, I loved him. I got to be honest with you, I can't much tolerate him anymore. I got to take him in small doses. He was talking about a piece that he's got posted at his website, theblaze.com, headlined, "Why Are Young Evangelicals Almost Just as Sexually Active as Non-Believers?" And I was saying that, you know, as I read this piece, the October issue of Relevant magazine, a youth-based magazine, is where he's getting his information from. But some of it is rather old. It's based on a December 2009 study and a 2007 article by Gene Edward Veith in World. And when I read this, I thought, man, is this just not old stuff? And how true is it that evangelical youth are just as sexually active as their non-believing counterparts? Well, who better to find out the background on all of this than our friend Dr. Mark Regnerus, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Texas at Austin. He's literally written the book on premarital sex. A few years ago, we first engaged Dr. Regnerus on his book, Forbidden Fruit, Sex and Religion in the Lives of American Teenagers. And now this year, he's out with a brand new book, co-authored with his colleague there, Jeremy Uecker, Premarital Sex in America, How Young Americans Meet, Mate, and Think About Marrying. And Mark, it's always great to have you here on the Paul Edwards Program. Welcome back.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be with you.
Have you seen this recent study? And I say recent study, it's a recent article, but the study based on 2009 data. Is this old news we're dealing with here?
Right. I had heard about it the other day, and I thought, well, is there something out there that somebody was working on that I was not aware of? But it is a little older, and it once you dig under it, it's not a whole lot about religion per se. I don't think this is new news. People trot these things out every couple of years to generate interest and sales or clicks or something. I didn't learn a whole lot new when I went to Relevant and read the article, which the article is sort of, you know, it could have been written on any issue.
Yeah, so what is the story about the sex lives of American teenagers in a nutshell? Are we, you know, as an evangelical pastor, I've often wondered, Mark, if we're not over-exaggerating the sexualization of evangelical teenagers. Isn't it a little more nuanced than that to be able to blanketly say, hey, the 18 to 24-year-old kids who define themselves as Christian are just as sexually active as their non-believing counterparts?
Right. Well, a lot of it has to do with, what do we mean by evangelical? Are we talking about teenagers? Are we talking about young adults? Are we talking about people later in their 20s? So the Relevant article says, it's titled, "Almost everyone's doing it. And if I'm not mistaken, it's a little bit more about sort of evangelicals who have had sex before they get married. And that is true. I mean, most people have had sex before they get married. A lot of times you'll hear accounts about, you know, their own faith didn't develop very intensively until after, you know, they went to college, they experienced a series of relationships, and they what they had thought would materialize didn't materialize. And so there's a generation of new religious intensity. But yeah, back when I wrote Forbidden Fruit, I guess it was 4 years ago, we found that they were evangelical teenagers, 13 to 18, were comparable in their sexual behavior patterns to sort of the average American. But when we looked a little more closely, you know, kids who are plugged into their churches and youth groups, of course, tend to abstain for longer. When they do have sex, they tend to have a more serious kind of relationship. I mean, so I don't think parents would do well to sort of sound off the alarm just yet. So a lot of it has to do with how plugged in are your teenagers in their religious life, and not just sort of, you know, how plugged they are into the youth group, but how intergenerationally plugged in are they? Because I think for parents and adults to show the way how is an important thing and definitely an understated influence.
Dr. Mark Regner is my guest. He is Associate Professor of Sociology and Faculty Research Associate in the Population Research Center at University of Texas at Austin. His website, markregneris.com, the author of the new book, Premarital Sex in America. You know, the relevant article seems to point an accusing finger at leadership in churches and saying that somehow the church has failed these kids because they're engaging in premarital sex and yet claim to be Christian. And this is right. The bulk of what Glenn Beck said yesterday on his program. He was saying, how can we claim to be Christian and behave in the same way as our unbelieving, non-believing counterparts? Is it true from where you sit, Mark, that there is a disconnect, a breakdown in our, you know, I'm sitting here at Michigan's largest evangelical college, looking at all of these beautiful students walking through the student center, 1,700 students on campus here. Is it true that somehow this institution and others like it are failing these kids and making them feel like, you know, everybody is almost doing it, almost everybody's doing it, so it's okay for you too?
Right. Back to sort of the nuances. No, not everyone is doing it. And so take Spring Arbor, for example. It's a very evangelical institution. Kids of fairly high religiousness are more apt to go there. So you're talking about people who are self-selected to be less likely to lose their virginity at a younger age or that sort of thing. But when we talk about evangelicals out there in the world, we're including everybody, not just the kid who goes to college. And we know that kids who don't go to college tend to have more active sex life earlier than kids who do go to college. So some of this is not about, you know, a religious influence. But I think the relevant article, it resonated with me in the sense of, you know, they talked to Scott McKnight down at North Park, and I think he has some wise things to say. What I don't think the blame ought to be placed on pastors. I mean, as if pastors needed more responsibility than they already have. A lot of this stuff is the result of sort of you know, the context in which we live. It's, you know, it is more sensualized than it used to be. We delay marriage longer than we used to. There's no shortage of especially young women who say, you know, I want to be chaste. Men too, but more women than men, frankly. But as, you know, they move through their 20s and they're approaching 30 and they're not even being asked out and they can be fairly attractive, I think a lot of people start to wonder, what's going on? Why aren't they being asked out? And, the way forward for them becomes more difficult because the speed with which relationships become sexual, doesn't get any slower in the 20s than in the teenagers. In fact, it picks up the pace.
Yeah, you know, and the reality is that on many college campuses, I don't want to paint with too broad a brush, but I think the trend is that you now have more female students than male students, and that has to be a nightmare for female students in terms of relationships.
Yeah, it's a total nightmare, and I told that to my alma mater, which is about two-thirds women today. The problem with that is not just sort of a lack of men, right? I mean, so let's say there's two girls for every boy, like the Beach Boys used to sing. The problem with that is that it leaves the women in a position of weakness in terms of defining how a relationship starts and moves forward, etc. I mean, the men have such extravagant selection, right? And I remember back when I was in college 20 years ago, you know, I'm not the finest person to look at, but I did more work to get attention of women than I think people have to do today, men especially. So you add to that Facebook, it just, you have options like you never used to, right? So men are selecting in a lot more environment of plenty than we did, say, 20 years ago. And in that sort of environment, what men want tends to occur more readily than it used to, right? And so even a Christian man might say, well, I don't want to have sex until marriage. But he'll have to revisit that regularly in his relationship, in part because the woman he is with, his girlfriend, is in such a structurally more weak position than she would have been if, you know, she was outnumbered by men. When girls are outnumbered by men, I say, you know, you should go to Georgia Tech or something. You know, you might have to date a nerd, but at least you know that you'll be treated really, really well.
Dr. Mark Regnerus, Premarital Sex in America, his book, How Young Americans Meet, Mate, and Think About Marrying. In your study, and I've not yet read your book, Mark, and I've got to get my hands on one and get it read because it's been out for a while, and I should have already read it. But in your study, I know that you deal with various constituencies and their views on premarital sex, like conservative versus liberal, and what the rates are of premarital sex in those two constituencies, for instance. Talk to me about whether or not it makes a difference if you're liberal or conservative, and then overall, what is the attitude of Americans in general, you think, toward premarital sex? Have we moved beyond the so-called puritanical view, and we do have the attitude now that, look, everybody's doing it, here's your condom, go for it?
Right. To that second question first. Yeah, there's a funny thing that happens when people turn 18. All of a sudden, everybody looks at them as if they're adults, even though they act less like adults than they ever have. American adults, 18 to 72, tend to think very differently about the sexual behavior of 16-year-olds than they do about 18-year-olds. So people are very reticent to approve teen sexual behavior. But, you know, if you're 19 or 20, on average, Americans are much more okay with that than when we're talking about somebody who's 16. Now, to your first question about liberal and conservative, there's a chapter in this book called Red Sex, Blue Sex, and how different political orientations, and I don't really want to say like they're Democrats or Republicans, it's a lifestyle conservatism, a lifestyle liberalism kind of thing. You know, everybody sort of wants the same thing long term. People are looking for relationships that last. Most people still want to get married. Most people still would like a family of some sort. The key difference I see between what I call reds and blues is that for reds, and plenty of them are conservative, semi-religious, but not in college. I mean, those reds, their relationships take fire really quickly. So you'll see plenty of conservative Americans who live very sexual lives when they're in their late teenagers to early 20-somethings, and you'll find them sort of talking about settling down by the time they're 21, right? Whereas blues are sort of just getting rolling by around age 20 or 21. It's very common, I know, in our interviews to find that blues on average waited longer to have sex than reds, but their period of experimentation was longer and drawn out. But at the end of it, all of these groups were still after the same thing. The most distinctive behavior is conservative, educated women, right? So not necessarily even religious. Conservative, college-bound, and college-educated women, they tend to have, you know, the highest virginity rates, the fewest sexual partners, and in the long run, probably are the most apt to marry on a timetable they want. But that whole timetable is being pushed off later into the 20s.
So it sounds like the safest place for my daughter between the ages of 18 and 24 might be a college campus, even though the stereotype is the opposite of that.
College campus, absolutely. I mean, people who are in college are more future-oriented and more careful than people who aren't. There are some colleges that are, you know, more dry and more chaste than others, but you got to watch that sex ratio. It's rising pretty quickly to have, you know, 60 to 70% women, and you might think that's a symbol or a sign of women's power on campus, but in the domain of relationships, it's often the complete opposite. And so a lot of private colleges have that problem, which in reality doesn't mean that, oh, a college that's 60% women is going to be very sexually permissive. What it will often mean, especially if it's an evangelical college, is that far more people go there and leave there having said, wow, I didn't barely date at all, and that was a disappointment, than a college that's a little bit more balanced.
The book is Premarital Sex in America, How Young Americans Meet, Mate, and Think About Marrying. Dr. Mark Regnerus, the author, and he, of course, is Associate Professor of Sociology down at the University of Texas at Austin. His website, www.markregnerus.com. He's one of the leading voices on this subject in America today, and I encourage you to go there, particularly if you've got young adults in college or on their way to college. You're going to want to read both of his books, the first one, Forbidden Fruit, and now this one, Premarital Sex in America, both available at markregnerus.com. Mark, it's always a joy to chat with you, and I hope we do it again soon.
You too, Paul. Thanks.